Looking to unlock uncapped upside from largest and most recognized NASDAQ 100 names, bolstered by the potential income and diversification benefits of bonds? Look to ticker CANQ, the Calamos Alternative NASDAQ and Bond ETF. CANQ delivers options-based exposure to NASDAQ 100 stocks, combining the risk mitigation and income benefits of a fixed income foundation. Upside NASDAQ 100 potential, manageable downside risk, while seeing monthly income along the way. That's a ticker worth researching. Demand more from your NASDAQ equity allocation. Explore ticker CANQ, the Calamos Alternative NASDAQ and Bond ETF. To learn more about CANQ, visit calamos.com/CANQ. Before investing, carefully consider the fund's investment objectives, risks, charges, and expenses. Please see the prospectus and summary prospectus containing this and other information, which can be obtained by calling 1-866-363-9219. Read it carefully before investing. An investment in the fund is subject to risks, and you could lose money on your investment in the funds. There can be no assurance that the funds will achieve its investment objective. Your investment in the fund is not a deposit in a bank and is not insured or guaranteed by the Federal Deposit Insurance Corporation or any other government agency. The risks associated with an investment in the fund can increase during times of significant market volatility. More detailed information regarding these risks can be found in the fund's prospectus. NASDAQ and NASDAQ 100 are registered trademarks of NASDAQ, Inc., distributed by Calamos Financial Services, LLC.
ETF Prime is hosted by Nate Geraci, president of investment advisory firm, The ETF Store. This program is for informational purposes only and does not constitute investment advice. Investing in ETFs involves risk, including potential loss of principal. Any past performance figures discussed are not necessarily indicative of future results. Some guests appearing on this program may also be financial sponsors of ETF Prime. The ETF Store is not affiliated with VettaFi or any of its affiliates. VettaFi's participation in this program should not be construed as an endorsement or indication by VettaFi of the value of any ETF Store product or service. Visit ETFstore.com for more information.
Now it's time for ETF Prime, where we discuss everything you need to know about exchange-traded funds and the world of investing. Whether you're an investing expert or just starting out, Nate will help you get up to date with what's happening on Wall Street and show you how exchange-traded funds can help lower your investment costs, reduce your tax bill, and allow you to take advantage of investment opportunities around the world. And now, the host of ETF Prime, Nate Geraci.
All right, joining me on this shortened edition of ETF Prime will be Todd Rosenbluth, head of research at VettaFi, and this is going to be fun. We're going to check in on my 2024 ETF predictions, which I think most of you know. I do these five predictions every year. I try not to come up with anything too obvious because there's no glory in that, right? And so these tend to be more stretch predictions, if you will. I try to go outside the box a little bit, though I do have a pretty good track record on these over the years, if I do say so myself. And so, long story short, I was looking at these the other day, and yes, that was because of spot Bitcoin ETFs. I had to check to see what exactly I had predicted on these, given everything that's going on with those. But as I was looking at that prediction and the other predictions, it became clear to me that even though we're less than 3 months into the new year, there are already some very interesting storylines developing on most of these. I feel like we have some real threads we can pull here. So Todd and I are going to go through my predictions and see where I stand. I'm 100% sure Todd will try to disparage me on a few of these as well, but I still feel good overall on most of them. Now, after we do that, I also thought it might be fun for each of us to make a few new predictions for the remainder of the year. We have had a free look at 2024, so we'll see if that helps us at all. And the way that we'll do this is I have absolutely no idea what Todd is bringing to the table and vice versa. He has no idea what I've conjured up. And so we're just going to surprise each other and bat those around and see where that takes us. As always, questions or comments, you can find me on X at Nate Geraci, or you can go to etfprime.com. Let's chat with the one and only Todd Rosenbluth.
Now we're joined by the experts at VettaFi, a new data analytics and thought leadership company that is transforming financial services from an industry to a community, one relationship at a time.
$800 billion. I think we have to say that again. $800 billion. and counting for an industry that is still growing in size is impressive.
Todd, always great having you on the podcast. Thank you for joining me.
It's my pleasure. Excited to be with you. I know we're going to dive into 2024 predictions, but since I have the floor, I would say I need to get you into New York so that we can settle up a 2023 bet earlier than you still owe me a steak dinner, if memory serves.
You know, I'm just shocked that you decided to bring that up. I can't believe it. We should tell listeners that prediction was on physical gold ETFs last year, where I said that they would have, what was it, over $5 billion in inflows. Is that correct?
Yeah.
And if you look, what's amazing, and maybe we can talk about this on the spot Bitcoin ETF prediction that I mentioned, it's amazing because physical gold ETFs still aren't really finding any traction. So I made this prediction last year, and I would have guessed by now we still would have seen some more uptake there because it's not like gold has performed terribly. But yes, I owe you a steak dinner. I will be out in New York at some point, I think over the next probably 2 or 3 months, and you can just 100% know I will settle up on that bet.
I know you're a man of your word, but I do think you're doing better with some of your thoughts for 2024, better perhaps than you think, I think.
Yeah, so, well, let's talk about that. So, you know, I did think it might be fun for us to do a quick check-in on these predictions, really for a couple of reasons. I think, number one, I do always try to keep myself honest. And while I do have a good track record on these overall, as we've already touched on, last year was definitely not my finest effort. And so I don't want to act like I just make these bold predictions every year and sweep them under the carpet when they don't go well. So I thought we should put a spotlight on them. And then two, it really is interesting because as I started looking back at these, I did notice there are some compelling storylines developing around most of them, even though we're only less than 3 months into the new year. And so I did think it'd be fun to unpack those. So I guess without further ado, let's start going through these five ETF predictions for 2024. And I guess on the first one, boy, I am picking up right where I left off last year. This does look like another bad one. So I said BlackRock would actually gain market share on Vanguard this year. Now, last I checked, and this is a little bit dated, but Vanguard has taken in about $50 billion already this year, while BlackRock has only taken in around $20, $21 billion. What's interesting is that iShares has two of the top three ETFs in terms of inflows this year, including IVV, the iShares Core S&P 500 ETF, and then the third best, IBIT, the iShares Bitcoin ETF, which again, we are going to talk about that here in a few moments. The problem is BlackRock also has several of the top ETFs in terms of outflows, including IWM, the iShares Russell 2000 ETF. We know what's been going on with small caps, and the iShares Russell 1000 Value ETF, IWD. So some of those are offsetting BlackRock's flow winners. Now, look, I know you're not surprised by Vanguard leading in flows, but are you surprised by the magnitude at all, that it's not even close at this point?
So I am. I think for the part of the reasons that you said, yes, BlackRock is benefiting from demand for spot Bitcoin ETFs. I have a feeling you're going to bring me back to dive deeper into spot Bitcoin ETFs. So let me move off of that for a second. But BlackRock's core series, which includes IVV, but also includes bond ETFs like IUSB and AGG and IJR, which is a small cap ETF, have seen strong inflows in the first 2 months of the year. You're right. The challenge has been that some of them more, there being BlackRock's more institutionally oriented, more trading vehicle products, have been out of favor. Let's just talk about Vanguard for a second. Vanguard has only one ETF that in the first 2 months had more than $1 billion of net outflows. BlackRock, obviously, you named a couple of them, and there were more for it. But what's interesting or compelling to me about Vanguard is the inflows have been broad-based. It is in the S&P 500-based product, VOO, and their total stock market ETF. But it's also outside the United States, VXUS and VEA, which the latter is a developed markets ETF, and VB, which is small cap, has seen really strong inflows. So I think this is as much as how strong Vanguard has come out of the gate in the beginning of the year. as opposed to BlackRock, which is having a solid start to the year. There's nothing wrong with it. It's just Vanguard has been strong.
Yeah, I agree with all of that. I think one of the challenges is that compared to Vanguard's lineup, and this is what you were alluding to, iShares ETFs do tend to be used more as trading tools. And that was actually part of my prediction, because I thought perhaps we might have a shifting market environment where investors might want to get a bit more tactical. But instead, at least thus far, it's really just been onward and upward for the largest mega cap stocks. It's been more of the same, and that's going to benefit Vanguard for sure. But, you know, I looked at BlackRock's lineup. Last year, they started making a more concerted effort to get involved with actively managed ETFs. I thought investors might be looking there a little bit more. And, you know, I was checking this morning. If you look at both BlackRock's and Vanguard's ETF lineup, so BlackRock has over 400 ETFs, and I show inflows into about half of those, a little more than half, versus Vanguard, which they only have 86 ETFs, but they've had inflows into about 75-80% of those ETFs. Now, I guess that's not, again, a huge shocker, because Vanguard is so methodical at just vacuuming up investor cash. But again, I thought maybe investors would get a little more tactical. The other thing that I'll say, and we keep alluding to this as well, part of my prediction with BlackRock was based on the iShares Bitcoin ETF, iBit. I said that could be a big catalyst to help vault them past Vanguard on flows. Not that one ETF can do it on its own. It was more that ETF would take in inflows, but also maybe attract investors to the remainder of iShares lineup. But again, Vanguard, Todd, they're just a machine. And obviously, we still have a long way to go this year, but this is not looking like my finest prediction. I probably should have known better. But that said, do you think there's any chance BlackRock overtakes Vanguard this year, or should we just call this one early?
No, I would not call this one early. I think there is a good chance that we see BlackRock at least pull even. And whether that's a neck and neck race and makes you all the more excited to bring me back in the fourth quarter. And what that could happen is if fixed income ETFs return to being in vogue. Now, they're having an okay start of the year, but this ETF, the ETF market has really been driven by equity ETFs. BlackRock has more exposure to fixed income ETFs. As we talked about, they're more tactical in some cases, fixed income ETFs. So if ETFs like HYG, which is the high yield ETF, or EMB, which is the emerging markets bond ETF, even if MUB, which is the municipal bond ETF, those three are all quite large. And in some cases, Vanguard doesn't offer a competitor or a peer within that space. Then I think BlackRock will do a lot better. But if fixed income, if we get what we have right now, which is the Fed on pause and investors not really making tactical changes to their fixed income portfolio much to start the year. If that persists, then I think it's going to be harder for BlackRock to pull even.
Yeah, I agree. By the way, just so people don't think I'm completely off my rocker making this prediction, because if you look, Vanguard has had greater inflows than BlackRock. I think it's been four consecutive years now, but BlackRock did have more inflows in the fourth quarter of last year. And so I think to what you're saying, a lot can still happen. We're still early in the year. But by the way, this is a bit unrelated. Did you see Vanguard CEO Tim Buckley is retiring? I thought that caught some people off guard. I'm not sure if you had any thoughts on that.
Yeah. So first of all, a credit to the success that Vanguard has had under Tim Buckley. Vanguard's last 5 years have been perhaps its best 5 years as an asset management company, as a financial services company. They've committed even more to the ETF marketplace in both product development, and investors have been embracing those ETFs. $1 trillion has gone into Vanguard ETFs in the last 5 years. This is as of the end of February data. So I'm excited for what the team has been doing. They mentioned, I don't know if you mentioned earlier about BlackRock offering active fixed income ETFs. Vanguard now does two. Well, they had one, but now they added a core and a core plus product, and they have recently rung the bell at NASDAQ, which is, again, a nice key milestone. I think Vanguard has been doing really well. I think what might have surprised people is it's just they're announcing it in March for it to happen at the end of the year, and they haven't named a clear successor. I don't think that this is an opportunity for you or I to necessarily apply for that job, but I guess the fact that they've made it public could be the case, or our good friend Eric Balchunas, who's based in Pennsylvania, maybe wants to throw his hat into the ring.
Hey, he did write a book on Bogle. Yeah, you're right. I think the Vanguard way, you would have expected them to name a successor at the same time that Buckley announced his retirement, but who knows what's going on there. To your point, by the way, on what Buckley accomplished over the last 5 years, I've said this already. I think he presided over one of the great runs any fund company will ever see in terms of asset growth. And so he absolutely deserves some credit for that. Now, I will say there are some other decisions he made that are probably a little more controversial. So I think, as you know, he pretty much stayed away from ESG just as a whole. They kind of pulled back the firm from that whole thing, which I guess that's looking a little better every day. He also dabbled in private equity, which, if you think about it, that really didn't fit the Vanguard brand. I think that ruffled a few feathers. He obviously stayed away from Bitcoin ETFs, which we'll see how that plays out. But that one, of course, is on brand. I think the one big complaint that I've seen just over the past several years, and I think it came to the surface more since he announced his retirement, is, and I think a lot of people just seem to agree with this, is around Vanguard's technology and customer service, right? Which I would say probably does need to be better, but you also get what you pay for, right? If you want no frills, low cost investing, you're probably not going to get all of the tech bells and whistles and concierge service that you might get from another fund company. I don't know that that should be viewed necessarily as a negative. You're not going to get the same sort of thing that a fintech startup has. I don't know if you have any thoughts on that. I mean, that seems to me to be the biggest complaint I've seen, just that he didn't upgrade their technology and service.
So I agree with what you're saying. I don't know enough about their spend and what their focus on is on, but when your products charge 3, 4, and 5 basis points, then there's less money perhaps to be able to go around. They've made it better for investors, and their success has contributed to more people visiting their sites, more people wanting to speak to somebody, more people wanting to do things, and obviously there's a cost. There's a reason why, even though there are zero-fee ETFs, there aren't a lot of zero-fee ETFs. This is still a for-profit business that we're all part of.
Growth and innovation, two words that best describe the ETF industry. However, rapid growth and innovation creates a critical need for financial advisors and industry practitioners. Education. Enter the ETF Institute, the first and only independent organization providing industry professionals and financial advisors with certification, education, and training on ETFs. Learn more about the Certified ETF Advisor designation by visiting cetf.org.
By the way, and we'll move on, did you have any thoughts on Vanguard gaining access to spot Bitcoin ETFs? And I want to be clear, I don't think that played in to Tim Buckley's departure. I mean, you never know, but I would just find that hard to believe unless that was like the straw that broke the camel's back with some other stuff that was going on. But putting that aside, did you think it was the right call by Vanguard to not allow investors to access spot Bitcoin ETFs?
So I think it's consistent with the way that they've, they're being the brokerage platform, has operated. So I believe you still cannot trade leverage or inverse ETFs on their brokerage platform. They're not alone in that regard. Vanguard, because of its brand and because it can be used by retail investors, not just financial advisors, gets more attention about what's on or not on the platform. But I believe you can't buy any of the Bitcoin ETFs on Merrill or Morgan Stanley or any of the other wirehouse firms as well. So these spot Bitcoin ETFs, as popular as they've been, and I think we're about to get there in your prediction, are not available everywhere. Vanguard is just the name that people are pointing fingers to. And yes, let me go on record with you and the audience. I have extreme confidence that the retirement of Tim Buckley has nothing to do with this decision, and it has to do with how long he's been there, and perhaps at some point people retire. I hope I get to do so sometime sooner versus later myself.
Yeah, I agree with you. It's just funny because obviously Vanguard gated access to spot Bitcoin ETFs, and then a couple of weeks later you had Buckley retiring or announcing his retirement, and so people very quickly try to put two and two together on that. I guess on that note, let's move on to my second prediction, which we keep beating around the bush on. And this one, I would say, has already cashed. This one's already hit. And that's that spot Bitcoin ETFs would obliterate every ETF launch record. And honestly, Todd, we don't need to spend much time on this one. You may have seen I've been taking multiple victory laps on Twitter or X, which I think you know. That's not really my style. But I took a lot of flack from people for covering this so much over the past several years. And I think people got tired of hearing about it, which is fine. But you look now, we have a truly unprecedented launch with all of these products, if you put them together. And so I do feel somewhat vindicated, especially when I think about some of the other topics over the years that got a lot of run, you know, ESG and direct indexing and those sorts of topics got a lot of run, but didn't necessarily produce to the level of their media hype. But anyways, very briefly, do you want to comment on my spot Bitcoin ETF prediction at all?
Yeah, I want to compliment you on your confidence that there would be a spot Bitcoin ETF approved. And at some point, this was your view. I think you made prior predictions that there would be one and that there would be demand. I thought there would be some demand out of the gate. I thought we would see investor pent-up demand and investor interest in the first week for these products. And then it would take time for greater availability and greater education to make its way to advisors and end investors. It's been even much stronger than I think anybody reasonably could have predicted in the first 2 months that we have several billion-dollar ETFs. We have even more several million-dollar ETFs, as you know, is a key milestone for many people. Again, regardless of whether or not the prediction was that spot Bitcoin would continue to rally, because I think there was a sell the news expectation that some people had with predictions. And it's just a sign that ETFs are a go-to vehicle and that they function. I think what we're talking about is not how they're trading, but how much they're trading, but not that they're trading with wide spreads or off of NAV. I honestly haven't looked at that in a little while because I figured somebody would have brought it to my attention if it was a problem. And so I don't think we've seen anything like this, not only the 10 products coming to market on day one, but the success. Across the board success for these different firms and their educational efforts to continue to bring people towards these ETFs.
I must say that after last year's predictions, it feels really good to have one of my predictions hit in March. I don't even have to wait for the whole year to check this one off. A couple quick comments and then we'll move on. What's I think really remarkable here is not only that this category is over $50 billion, and of course, Grayscale came to the party with GBTC having $28 billion, but this whole category blew through the $50 billion mark. Yes, a decent chunk of that was driven by the rise in the price of Bitcoin, but obviously flows have been strong. And the remarkable thing is, going back to what we were talking about earlier, these things aren't even accessible on a lot of major platforms. They're doing this with one hand tied behind their back. So as that access begins to open up, and I think advisors just get more comfortable in general, because as you know, rightly or wrongly, a lot of advisors want to see some semblance of a track record before allocating to products. So the more time that goes by, the more comfortable they're going to get with that. Access is going to open up. And I just think the educational efforts as well. Like I think of somebody like Bitwise, and I'm seeing the amount of resources they're putting in to educating the general public on how these ETFs work and the potential role of Bitcoin in a portfolio. All of these things are going more mainstream, and I think that's going to help the asset class overall. The other thing I'll mention is, yes, I owe you a dinner on the physical gold ETFs. Bet. The good news is I'm getting some of those dinners back on people who bet against me on spot Bitcoin ETFs. So I think I'm net positive on owing dinners overall.
Well, and I hope that it's during the month of March that Eric Balchunas and I will have dinner that he owes me for the fact that the spot Bitcoin ETF came to market in calendar year 2024. He like you, has been on this, and he and his team have been covering this tremendously, and I have to admit I got lucky. But yes, lucky still is a victory.
All right, my third prediction for 2024 was that the SEC would approve the multi-share class structure, where fund companies could offer an ETF share class of their mutual funds, just like Vanguard does, except the current filings out there all involve actively managed products, where, of course, Vanguard is only using this for passive funds. But my prediction, I guess it was sort of twofold. It was that, one, the SEC would approve the multi-share class structure this year, and then two, that it would, quote-unquote, steal the ETF show, meaning this would be the ETF story of the year. Now, with how well spot Bitcoin ETFs are doing, I'm not sure about that second part in terms of stealing the ETF show. We'll see. But any quick thoughts on whether the SEC is going to approve this structure, or do you think it's still too early to tell?
So I think it's still too early to tell. I agree with you that I think that we will see approval. I might, but that's as much hope as fact-based on it. The SEC hasn't said anything since the beginning of the year. It's not in their nature to do so. And unlike not only spot Bitcoin ETFs, which we now have in the marketplace, or spot Ether ETFs that have deadlines, there's no ticking clock, to my knowledge, that the SEC has to deal with this at all. But I do think they will, because of there's asset managers that continue to seek out the approval of a multi-asset class structure. What I'm trying to get my head around, and I'd love for you to weigh on this as an advisor, put on your advisor hat for a moment, not your ETF pundit. Do you and your clients, do you feel like advisors are holding out using ETFs because their clients are in mutual funds, they don't want to create a tax burden, but yet they're comfortable with how ETFs function? I'm just not sure that that's the case. People who like mutual funds or are comfortable in mutual funds, I'm just not sure that they're going to convert the mutual fund shares to ETFs, which I think would be able to happen in a tax-efficient manner. So I don't know that my question came clear on this, but do you think that there actually will be demand for these, or that there'll be supply?
If I'm understanding your question correctly, I would say the key here is that there's going to be greater supply, because the challenge is you have these traditional mutual fund companies that are dominating retirement plans, so 401ks, 403bs, those sorts of things. We know mutual funds are firmly entrenched there. I've said that this is really the last bastion for mutual funds. And so if you're in their shoes, if you can keep that lucrative mutual fund or retirement plan business, but then also pursue the higher growth, the much higher growth ETF market, it's a win-win. And so I think it's a supply-driven situation here, where they will offer many more strategies, their existing mutual fund strategies, that aren't currently available in an ETF wrapper. I've seen, and this may be extreme, but even over the past couple of weeks, Todd, I've seen some of our friends, some other ETF analysts, talking about how this could be, this could spark like 1,000 or 2,000 ETFs coming to market, if not more. I don't know if, you know, that's overdoing it a little bit, but I do think it's going to significantly increase the supply. And if you have more options out there, as you know, I think advisors will find them if they're good. That's my take on it.
Yeah, so I agree with you from a supply standpoint. I like when new products come to market, and I like when there's a chance to educate more investors about the benefits of ETFs. I know so do you, and obviously that's why you built the ETF Institute, that you are a key voice behind. But I wonder if there's demand. And so supply is a great thing. Whether or not there's demand, I think that'll be determined on how asset managers, if approved, work to educate their overall base. Because people who only know mutual funds, I don't think are going to be that eager in a buy and hold to convert it to an ETF, even unless it's notably cheaper.
Yeah, we can move on. I'll just say, without getting into the dynamics of how mutual funds are sold into retirement plans, there are, as you know, trillions of dollars of assets in mutual funds in those retirement plans. So there's clearly demand for those types of funds. Some of these, a lot of them are actively managed strategies, of course. That's what we've seen in the filings with the SEC on this multi-share class structure. My point being, there's clearly demand within retirement plans. So I think it'd be fair to assume that same demand would exist if they're outside of those 401ks and 403bs, et cetera. So we'll see. And by the way, for listeners, if you want to hear some really interesting perspective on the multi-share class structure, I would encourage you to listen to my conversation last week with Sean Tuffy, who's a financial regulation expert. We got into this, and there's some interesting dynamics with something called the SEC swing pricing proposal, just that plays into whether or not this the structure will be approved. So encourage you to listen to that. All right, Todd, let's move on here. My fourth prediction, which maybe we might have a little debate on this one, it was that the covered call ETF bubble would pop. So basically that after the underperformance of ETFs like JEPI last year, the JP Morgan Equity Premium Income ETF, which significantly trailed the S&P 500, I said that if the stock market continued to climb higher in 2024, which it has thus far, investors would flee these products in droves. And I also said we would see a spike in covered call ETF closures. Now, again, it's still very early here, but I want to be fair. JEPI does have over $1 billion in inflows this year, and it looks like issuers are actually launching products versus closing them. So perhaps I'm early, which I do have a tendency to do with my predictions, but I'm going to hold firm on this one. I still believe I'll be right on this longer term. Will it be 2024, 2025? I guess we'll see, but I still feel good about this one overall. What do you think about this one?
I think early is a nice way of saying no. I guess at some point there will be money moving out of these products. At some point there will be ETFs that close. I don't think either of those things are going to happen in 2024. You mentioned JEPI, that's the JP Morgan Equity Premium Income ETF with more than $1 billion. It's actually been eclipsed in the first 2 months by its younger brother, JEPQ, JEPQ, which is the NASDAQ Equity Premium ETF, which is, of course, doing quite well from a performance standpoint because of its exposure to those NASDAQ growth stocks. But we, instead of just giving you my opinion, let me tell you what advisors told us. We asked advisors during a recent webcast, and it was, again, sample size and sample focus. It was during a webcast about covered calls. But we asked the question, have you implemented a cover call strategy in your client portfolio? Now, we weren't specific to ETFs, and we gave choices that included yes for single stocks and yes on indices, as well as no or no, but I'm considering it. And 42% of the advisors that responded to this survey told us they were essentially doing research. They were here to learn about a new investment idea tied to covered calls. So I'm not surprised that there is supply and growing supply because there is demand and there's investor interest. And in the article that I wrote based on this data, I focused on both ETFs that offer options tied to indexes, that's the JP Morgan suite, JEPI and JEPQ are examples of it, but also those ETFs that write calls on the stocks themselves. And so Amplify's ETF, Divo, D-I-V-O, is a good example of that. And you're right, there's new supply. Swan Global launched an ETF that we at Vettify did a webcast on during in recent weeks. And we just got a new product from Cullen Capital. Cullen has been around in the SMA and mutual fund space, and they've launched a covered call based on individual stocks. So I think we will be talking about covered call strategies as a success story again in 2024.
Equities are the building blocks of any successful portfolio. From satellite exposure to core allocations, advisors must understand the best way to wield equities if they want to succeed. Join VettaFi on March 13th for the Equities Symposium and hear from industry experts and thought leaders. Register at etftrends.com. That's etftrends.com.
Now I just feel really down after you bludgeoning me with hard data and facts. I don't know there's much I can dispute there. It is amazing. Like you mentioned, the single stock cover call ETFs, somebody like YieldMax, I was looking at this. They came to market less than a year and a half ago. They already have over $2 billion in assets, including something like $800 or $900 million in their Tesla Option Income Strategy ETF, ticker TSLY. It is amazing. I guess maybe I'm just underestimating how investors and advisors are using these. And I, again, Todd, I looked at performance last year. And again, I'm painting with a broad brush here because there's a lot of different strategies. I just mentioned single stock cover call strategies. But as a whole, these things underperformed pretty substantially. And I just wonder what happens if the market does continue to run. Now, if the market goes the other way, then these make more sense to me because you have the income component and then you're also essentially have a buffer to the downside. But I guess we'll see. I do think performance will be a factor here. But again, maybe I'm early. I'm still going to hold the fort on this one. I think longer term I'll be correct. Okay, I want to make sure we save time to get to some new predictions. So let's go through this last prediction I had for 2024 very quick, and then we'll get to what you think may happen the rest of the year. And this one was definitely a little bit outside of the box. So I said Strive Asset Management would excel during this election year. And for people unfamiliar with Strive, they were co-founded by Vivek Ramaswamy, who since I made this prediction, Vivek has dropped out of the Republican primary race, though there are still some rumblings that he could potentially be Donald Trump's running mate. But regardless, my prediction was that Vivek, given him running and potentially being a VP candidate, he would help drive visibility around Strive and sort of their anti-ESG approach. And actually, anti-ESG probably isn't the right term. They're more just focused on earnings and shareholder value and those sorts of things, not really ESG type stuff. But my prediction was that Strive would easily double assets this year. Now, I checked flows recently. Strive has brought in approaching $150 million in assets so far this year. So they begin the year with a little over $1 billion. They've now added that, a little bit of market appreciation. So I'm still tracking pretty good on this. If you just do the math and extrapolate that out, I think this one will hit. But any quick thoughts on what we've seen from Strive?
Yeah, I mean, so you're right. They essentially, or in many cases, they offer identical underlying investments to what BlackRock is offering. And it feels like BlackRock is the firm that is in focus for them. But they're attempting to make this more a capitalistic approach. I honestly just don't think people care enough, both either to in a more pro ESG approach and shareholder rights, and or pushing back against that. Now, certainly some people care about it. I just don't think there's as much critical mass behind this to drive money into the product. So yes, STRV, which is the S&P 500-like strategy, I think it's pulled in $60 million, give or take, in the first couple of months of the year. Just for perspective, IVV has pulled in $17 billion. So, $60 million could easily happens in a day. So could it be more successful? I don't know where the scale is of how we're judging this, but just let me name another firm that's out there. T. Rowe Price has gathered $400 million this year, and it now has its first billion-dollar ETF with TCAF, TCAF, which is a capital appreciation equity fund. So I think there's lots of smaller firms that are gaining scale. And I guess lastly, at the risk of putting my politics on display, I think the election is going to be about at the top of the ticket, not whoever happens to be or is the current vice president.
But do you think my prediction will hit with them getting to $2 billion, or is your point, and this is fine, that that's not really anything to take a victory lap on, that maybe I wasn't outside the box or too outlandish with this prediction? I was trying to go with something a little off radar.
Yeah, so I think, sure, it could happen, and we could see demand. I just don't think it's going to be because of the election cycle and talk about this. I think Strive has a unique approach. It appeals to a certain investor base. Could they get to another $400 or $500 million of money coming in this year and then benefit from the tailwind of the market? Yes, it could happen.
Yeah, and I think your point, their investment lineup, what they're actually doing investment approach-wise, is not differentiated. So they have to hang their hat on this other sales point on focusing on shareholder value and the proxy voting and all of that. And is that going to resonate with the average person, even if there is more exposure around the company due to Vivek? I guess we'll see. Okay, I know we're running a little short on time, so let's get to a few new predictions for the remainder of the year. And as I mentioned at the top, we have had a free look at 2024, so we get to cheat just a little bit. So do you want to go first, or shall I?
I guess I'll do one, and then feel free to comment on it, and then give me your one, and then we'll see where we are time-wise.
Perfect. Go for it.
So mine is that Capital Group is going to be a top 10 net inflow gatherer in 2024. Based on Vettafi data at the end of February, I think they were the 21st largest overall firm with $22 billion. They've only had products out in the marketplace for 2 years. So I think as these products make their way into closer to a three-year anniversary and the broad active core strategies, both in equity and fixed income, I think they're going to gain ground. For perspective, they've added just over $2.5 billion, I think, in the first 2 months. I think they're going to continue to punch above their weight this year. So my prediction is they're going to be at the end of the year, we will see them at the bottom of the top 10 in terms of asset gathering in 2024.
I like that one. It was notable to me at the recent exchange conference how prominent their presence was there. And I think they're doing a really good job of getting their message to market. I think you look at somebody like Holly Framstead over there, she's doing a really good job, a great ambassador for everything that they're building. And if we look historically, we know the success that Capital Group has had in the fund space in general. So they have that pedigree and that brand. They have that trust with advisors. And so, I think that's a good one. I could see that happening. Okay, so I'm going to give you my first one, which you're not going to be surprised at all. And everybody here is going to probably laugh. So I predict that spot Ether ETFs will be approved this year. And I also think they're going to have a highly successful debut. Now, in fairness, I think the general sentiment for most people is that these will likely be approved. I see a lot of like 50 or 60% probability of approval predictions, though there are some people saying there's no chance it happens. But I'll say predicting approval isn't necessarily going out on a limb. And I'm saying that because the SEC approved CME traded futures ETFs, or CME traded Ether futures ETFs. However, I do think the consensus is that investor demand will underwhelm on these. Todd, I don't think that's going to happen. I think if you look at the market cap of Ether compared to Bitcoin, it's about one-third the market cap. And so very simply, given the success of spot Bitcoin ETF so far, which we obviously talked about earlier, why should we expect anything less than a third of the demand for spot Ether ETF? So what do you think about that one?
So I agree with you. First of all, let me lay out there. You put five predictions at the beginning of the year. I think I gave you one at the end of last year heading into 2020. So the fact that you've already done so many, I'll give you the pass in predicting something happening that I think everybody else agrees with, or everybody that I know of thinks we're going to see approval of spot Ether ETFs. I agree with you on that. I think the conversion, I believe Grayscale is going to try similarly to convert its Ether product, which has critical mass, the last time I looked at it. Not as big as obviously as the Bitcoin product that they had when it converted it. I'm a little more skeptical that there'll be the demand, and I'm judging that based on the lack of demand for Ether futures-based ETFs. Now, that might be the case. The fact that we didn't see as much money in Ether futures ETFs relative to Bitcoin futures ETFs might have to do with the fact that there was expectations that we'd get spot Bitcoin approval and people were just holding out. But I don't think it's going. I don't think we're going to look back on 2024 as the year of both spot and Ether success stories from an ETF standpoint. I think we're going to look at it from the spot standpoint only.
Yeah. Again, this prediction, I think, is more, I see a lot of people saying if these things are approved. I agree. The approval part is sort of the easy part of this prediction. It's just that people doubting whether or not demand will exist. And that Grayscale Ethereum Trust you mentioned, ETHE, that has like $10 billion in assets. So I don't think the Ether futures ETFs are a good gauge for these, because I think people saw that spot Bitcoin ETFs were going to be approved, and they assumed that spot Ether ETFs wouldn't be too far behind. And so they were like, you know what, I'm not going to allocate to the Ether futures ETFs. I'll just wait for the real thing. And so I just don't think that that's a good gauge. We'll see. Everybody doubted my predictions around spot Bitcoin ETF demand. So we'll see what happens with spot Ether ETFs. All right. Any other predictions from you, Todd?
Yeah. I'll do my version of this quick. Feel free to do as long a comment if you need to. But my further out on the limb prediction is that the equal weight version of the S&P 500, which is RSP from Invesco, is going to outperform the market cap weighted versions of the S&P 500 in SPY and IVV and VU and SPLG. I believe that dispersion looks like it could widen. We saw equal weight. Now, it underperformed the cap weighted in February, but it was only by about 100 basis points. The gap narrowed. There's a lot of people who continue to be concerned about concentration risk in the S&P 500. That doesn't mean people are going to buy the ETF, although they certainly could. I just think we're going to see a market, if we get adjustments in Fed moves and rate cuts, that we could see a shifting market. And so the 500 stocks or 500 or so companies equally weighted, I think, will at the end of the year outperform. Now, I very much could be wrong on this.
Woo, a market prediction from you. I like that. Going out on the limb, betting against the Magnificent Seven stocks. That is bold. I see where you're coming from. I guess, you know, we've talked a lot on several of these predictions. It probably is going to come down. The success of those predictions will come down to what the market does. That's an interesting one. I will say I expect flows into RSP to continue for sure. I think that'll be one of the top flow getters. I think a lot of investors and advisors are looking to strategies away from the market cap weighted, you know, top heavy mega cap strategy. So that's an interesting one. Okay, real quick, let me give you another one from my standpoint, which I think you'll like. And you kind of foreshadowed this earlier when you were talking about issuers not going to a zero fee. So try this one on for size. I actually predict one of the big three ETF issuers, so BlackRock, Vanguard, or State Street, and then I'm going to toss in Schwab just because they're viewed as a low-cost issuer. I predict that one of those four issuers will drop the fee on a popular ETF or perhaps multiple ETFs to zero. And let me just briefly color that. So State Street already has SPLG, the Spider Portfolio S&P 500 ETF at 2 basis points. I think, you know, JP Morgan has an ETF there as well. And then, of course, BNY Mellon, they have a couple of zero expense ratio ETFs. But I think one of these four major issuers is going to cause a huge buzz by dropping fees to zero on some popular products. I feel like we've had this fee war quietly simmering in the background for years. It's always going on. Issuers just keep taking turns undercutting each other. There's nowhere else to go. They've got to go to zero. And I think that happens. So could you see that happening?
So I thought that would happen years ago, I made this prediction a couple of years ago. We ended up getting BNY Mellon doing it because they could subsidize. Yeah, sure. I mean, I just think if you're going to do it, you got to do it with a product that has almost no money in it to try to jumpstart it. So sure, State Street, who's the distant third provider, I could see it making sense for them, but I don't think you do it in the S&P 500-based product, given you have SPY. Or maybe you can because you can't afford to do so, but we could see it in another investment style. That'd be great. I'd love it. I just don't think it's going to happen. I don't think anyone's going to blink yet.
There's nowhere else to go, and I think that one of these issuers is going to do it more for, it's a marketing expense is the way to think about it. And even if they're running a loss leader, we won't get into securities lending revenue and all that. I just think that one of these issuers is going to be willing to go there. We'll see. By the way, I saw Cambria is going to zero expense ratios on all of their ETFs with less than $50 million. So maybe that's an early indication. But Todd, we're going to have to leave it there. Great stuff this week. I always enjoy our conversations. This was a lot of fun. So thank you for joining me.
Yeah, thanks for having me. And thanks again for the education you put out in the marketplace.
Thank you. That was Todd Rosenbluth, Head of Research at Vettafi. That'll do it for this week's ETF Prime. Next week, I'll be joined by Dimensional's Rob Harvey. So Dimensional is now approaching $130 billion in assets, which they've done in about 3.5 years. It's pretty remarkable. So we'll talk about that growth and what's been driving their over $6 billion in inflows this year. And then we'll specifically look at their equity ETF lineup. Should be a really interesting conversation. Until then, have a great week, everyone.